Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM. FM. What does FM stand for? Is that frequency modulated? FM. Hey, don't blame me. What about this thing? Why do people fight so much? Do you ever notice in relationships, is violence a good thing in relationships? Well, of course, physical violence we know is not a good thing. But what about passion? What about, you know, you get these nice relationships where everybody talks nicely to each other and they're just nice, hi, how are you, kind of stuff. Or do you like the kind of relationship where there's heat, where there's passion, where there's tension? I remember once a wise man, or somebody who was thought of as a wise man, used to said to a younger man, you know, a woman wants to always get a raise out of her man. I think he said a rise out of her man. And one thought of that sexually, you know, as soon as he said that, he thought, oh, you mean sexually rise. But he meant anything. He meant, look, there are times that a woman wants to know that the man feels passionately one way or another concerning her, not just apathetic. So there are times, he said, this older man, I think he was 90 at the time when he was advising this, to this grandson kind of guy. He said, there are times that a woman is just going to start to pick a fight with you over nothing just because she wants to see you get angry. Interesting. Well, I know a woman who responded to that and also said, you know, I've noticed that with men too. Every now and then I'll be out with men and we'll have this nice thing and then suddenly they pick a fight. They complain about something. So is there something to it? Is there something to the need to have some kind of negativity with someone else in a relationship at an intense level so that you can almost feel like you want to either tear each other's heart out or you want to absolutely leave the relationship? Are these critical, vital moments? Is it like an exercise? Is it like a rubber band? Is it way of pulling apart so you could get back together again? You know, like they talk about makeup sex. Makeup sex is sex you have after an argument. And they say how passionate it is and how great it is. Makeup sex compared to when you don't wear makeup, I guess. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Hey, so we're talking about, but I want to know something about these arguments. I want to know something about the nature of them because there's one aspect of arguments that is not present in the animal world. Here we are looking at alpha males and beta males, and tomorrow, in fact, on Wednesday, we'll be doing more of that with Roberta Maria Atti, talking about people who are on top and people who are in packs and comparing ourselves to wolves. I just saw a fantastic thing about wolves and a man who lives with the wolves and comparing us to our simian ancestors. The one thing they don't do is they don't blame each other. See, blame. Blame is a human phenomenon. I'm curious about blame. Think about the last argument you had with someone. And here's the way the argument usually goes. You, and the other person says, you, and then the first person says, no, you, no, you, back and forth, you arguments. These are blame arguments. These are arguments in which everybody is finding fault with the other person. It's as if it's an argument where one person can win. It's as if somebody says to the other person, it's your fault that we are in this situation, and eventually the other person will crumble, and they will give up the argument, and they'll say, yes, it's true, it's my fault that we're unhappy. That's what the attempt is. If you think about the last argument you had, if you had a transcript of it, how many times would the word you appear? You is accusatory. It is meant to say, I blame you. I blame the other person. People have a tendency to find someone to blame when bad things happen. The behavior is certainly very prevalent and easy to observe in children. You know, like, think about children. Children, when they have a, when something goes wrong, they blame immediately. So why does that happen in children? Did they learn it from the adults? The burgeoning political liability business in our country attests to the pervasiveness of the tendency of adults to blame each other as well. So we're trying to figure out, why do we do it? What's it all about? What's blame about? Well, there are a few situational factors that affect the likelihood that other blame will occur. Number one, it's the presence of the other person at the time of someone's discomfort. So if you, you know, if you're not feeling comfortable, if there's something wrong with you, you look around like everybody would, I guess, and you try to figure who made it happen. And if you're close to somebody, you blame them. It's your fault. It's your fault. Why am I unhappy? It's your fault. In a book by a friend, Brenda Lukman, did a book called Why Men Leave. And when asked why men leave, 90% of the men who leave relationships leave because they felt to blame. They felt they could not satisfy their partner in the relationship. They felt so fault. And they even believed it. They believed they were at fault. They believed that it was their job to make the other person feel better, and they couldn't do it. So they left the relationship because they found someone else who was happy with them. And so they leave. Why would we continue to blame each other if we know that it's going to lead to that person eventually leaving us? Do you think blame makes someone stay around? Well, certainly it does. If you shame somebody, blame somebody into a point where they are so coward that they feel like bad little boys and bad little girls, sure, they'll stick around, but they're not going to be much of a mate. They're going to be like a little puppy dog who feels guilty, who's hiding in a corner. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We want to take a look at blame, and we want to take a look at how we could take each one of you and help you undo your part of the blame cycle so that you can get a more rich and better relationship. How do you not blame somebody? How do you do it? I mean, how do you do it? How do you have a conversation? Think of a conversation in which one person is blaming and the other person is not. Here's how it would go. Why didn't you come home for dinner? Because I forgot. You always forget. I'm sorry, I forgot. That's one thing about you. You don't consider me enough. See, now the yous are happening. So now at this point, the person could, and their normal thing, what happens under attack, when you're under attack, you could turn around and you could start saying, no, not I, but you. So you say, well, you didn't tell me what time we were going to meet for dinner. And so, yes, I did. I did tell you what time we were going to meet. And you just forgot it. No, you wrote me a note. And you forgot to write me a note. You were going to leave me a note. No, you, and then you, and then you, and then you, and this thing takes place back and forth, and it's just dreadful. Because after a while, you kind of exhaust it. After you throw a few slurs in there, and a few kind of wounds, and you kind of, you know, tell the other person that they're no good, and there's something wrong with them, and they're deficient, and then you walk away from each other, having scratched, wounded, scarred the other person a little bit. And nothing's taken place. What's the alternative? What's better than having an argument? Is it bad to have arguments? No, it's very important to deal with each other about things that you might disagree on. But how do you do it? So let's say that you were somebody of the highest integrity, which means you don't blame, which means that in an argument and in a discussion, you use the word I as opposed to the word you. You, instead of saying you are to fault, you say it's I, and you tell about yourself, and I'll try to explain how you do that. But in an argument where one person is trying to own, trying to say, I am willing to bring you my bare belly about what I feel, and then the other person is continuing to attack, it's very difficult. It's like trying to bare your belly to somebody who keeps attacking you. So it's a very difficult thing, but you know, somewhere along the line, we've got to learn that skill, because if you learn that skill, you start undoing this thing that takes place. And that's my hope for you today, teaching you some tool for working in relationships without blaming. Getting out of the blame, there are four parts to blame, right? One is, take one aspect of blame. One aspect of blame is you believe it. The blame believing, that means you feel guilty, you feel criticized, and you take it in that somebody puts you down. So one aspect is the blame believer, right? The guilt person. It's my fault. I'm a schnook. How long since you've heard that word? How long, schnook? Where did that come from? Number two is if you don't take blame, you blame someone else. So if you're not a passive blame receiver, as many masochists are, as many dependent people are, as many passive-aggressive people are, you see, you take the blame and you go, oh, there's something wrong with me, it's my fault, I'm a bad person. That's one. Now the other is the blamer. Now, it's something about people who blame a lot. The people who blame a lot are usually people who feel blamed by other people. See, they always, in other words, they're very sensitive to being blamed, so they blame back. So you'll hear them saying, you're blaming me, you're blaming me, you're blaming me. And then they blame you for blaming them. See, so the blame-sensitive person. Now, this is very true of dominant personality types. In the Enneagram, the leaders, the dominant types, are very often the biggest ones who are blamers. And the most sensitive to blame. Because, you know, if you could blame somebody for something that they didn't do, why should they care? Let's say you say to someone, you know, you made the sky dark outside. Are you going to believe that you made the sky dark outside? Some people are going to take that on. They're going to say, well, if I weren't in such a depressed mood, it might be better outside. So one is some people take blame personally, and the second one is people who blame. They blame a lot. They blame other people a lot. Then there's a third, which is when you step out of it, you see, instead of being a blamer, you sense that it is your feelings that leave you sensitive to this blaming thing. That whatever hurt is going on, you check into your feelings and you realize that there's a big difference between a cause and a reaction. The cause, who causes somebody to feel things? When we're kids, we are taught to believe that we make other people feel things. Your mother says to you, you made me happy, you made me sad, you made me something. Don't make me guilt, don't make me angry. Somehow you buy this piece of magic that you can make somebody feel something. You cannot, my dear friends, make somebody feel something. You cannot make somebody angry. You can't. You can't do it. You don't have the wand to do it. Now you may be persistent enough to go after somebody and goad somebody to eventually, if you stick them with a stick or something, they're going to get angry. But they have to have that anger inside them in order for you to get angry. You cannot make someone feel something. Nobody can. But the belief is that you can. So when someone says, you made me feel sad, you made me depressed, it's a lie. The belief that you can make somebody feel something is at the bottom of this blaming thing. Because if you blame somebody, you're saying to them, the reason I feel bad is your fault. But no, the reason I feel bad is because I have something going on inside of me that is at the moment very sensitive. And something you do may have triggered that. But the thing is inside me. This is Armand DeMille with you, by the way, with The Positive Mind, trying to teach you a little something about the old issue of blame and why blame takes place. Now, you know, remember the hypothesis, maybe the idea that people blame each other back and forth is just because they're kind of using an exercise like butting heads, you know, like two rams butting their heads. Maybe it has nothing to do with reality. Maybe it's just a warm-up. But the way people blame each other is so much hurt and so much separateness that results from it. This is why people become asexual. Blame. You blame somebody often enough, they turn off to you completely. Right? They're not going to be turned on to you sexually anymore. What do they care? You know, that's the way they get even. Blame. Blame, which is what we see, what we saw in our families, our grandmothers, our mothers. You know, blame. What we do, blame. So one of the things that we do in learning about blame is we begin saying and understanding that any feeling I have is not caused by you. It may be triggered by you. Now, what does that mean, triggered? Triggered means the feeling's inside me and you said something that pushed a button inside me and I reacted. But if I didn't have that trigger, you know, it wouldn't have happened. Imagine if you grew up with a father who was a dominant father, who beat you up and who never let you get anywhere and wouldn't let you have any space in your life. And then somebody comes along and says something to you that's demeaning. Because of that button that was set up when you were a kid about somebody who demeaned you, when somebody comes along who demeans you, it sets off a trigger. It sets off a button inside of you, and you react just like when you were a kid. You react to this thing happening. That's called a button. A button is when somebody does something that triggers you into an early childhood response. So people don't make you angry. People trigger your anger. People do stuff. If people persist at doing things to you, they will just trigger the stuff that you have inside you. So one of the things that you do is you begin to believe that when you have bad feelings, instead of you look inside you and you look no longer to blame someone else. You've gotten to stage 3 where you're no longer blaming anybody. And you say to yourself, oh, well, that person, I'm really mad at that person. Let me see what's happening inside me at this moment. Sometimes, you know, you could feel emotionally frail. It could be for a man or a woman some hormonal time of the month. You know, men have hormonal times in their month. Women have hormonal times in their month. When, you know, or it could be male or female menopause. It could be going through a certain part of your life. And you're going through it and you're just feeling sensitive. Or maybe it's right before your birthday. It's a time when people sometimes really fall into a funk. You know, and you feel yourself aging or something. And so you get up there and you start, you know, you start fighting or blaming or creating some kind of negative experience. But once you get to know yourself, you don't believe it when you're blaming somebody else for your grief. So the fourth part of it, when it comes to blame, is that you begin to look at the other person not as just the person who was screaming at you, not as just the person who's yelling to you, but you begin seeing that the person who is so upset is really a person in need. You don't start getting automatically triggered into reaction, into having a reaction back, you know? So if somebody is yelling at you and blaming you for something, you don't defend yourself. You don't start defending immediately. You don't start counterattacking. Somebody blames you. You're late because you don't care about me. You don't start proving how much you care about them. You don't defend yourself, but you see that that person has needs. At the fourth stage of it, when you're at your highest developed phase, you will understand that you have feelings that are not caused by the other person, but may be triggered by the other person. And at the highest level, you see that both you have sensitive feelings and they have sensitive feelings too. And underneath all of this blame and all of this stuff going on are two little kids who are hurting and need something that's not immediately available. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a Positive Mind. We're examining the issue of blame and why people blame each other, you know? How can you tell whether the criticism you feel is valuable or useless? How do you feel it? Those are, I mean, sometimes there is blame that counts. Politically, there is some kind of blame. There's accountability. But the way people use accountability with each other is basically to tell them they're wrong, but it's not to correct anything. How about that feeling of everlasting criticism? Imagine being married to someone who feels critical of you and who gives you over and over again every day a feeling of contempt for your being in some way criticable. I like that word. Worthy of criticism or deserving criticism. Imagine somebody who looks at you with disdain. Imagine being married with someone who looks at you critically and goes, ugh, and they have something negative to say about you all the time. And no matter what you do, there's something negative to say. And if you say to them, you know, you haven't said anything positive to me all day. Didn't I say good morning? It doesn't make a difference. So there is something inside. Of course, you know, there's got to be a part of us that can defend ourselves. But I want to know about you. Are you stuck in blame? Are you caught in some kind of critical lemon where you are stuck from early childhood, where you've been blamed and you've been defending yourself just like you're a kid? Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. It's 212-209-2900. I'd like to know about you and your relationship to blame itself and what you have to say about it. What do you have to say about this being in this world and your responsibility? Do you ever wish you could just keep your mouth shut? How would you talk to somebody if you would try to say to them, you know, well, let's talk about being late for dinner, you know, a benign thing. Benign. How would you tell the truth? Or better yet, you know, imagine this one. Imagine if you knew your mate was staying at work or stayed at work extra late or went out with his friends and were having, you know, stopped for a couple of drinks on his way home or just stopped with a couple of friends, no matter whether it was for drinks or not, and then he came in the door and you just were angry because you're angry because you don't like him going with his friends because you're afraid that when he goes with his friends, they talk about things and somehow maybe they talk about you and you get that in your mind, right? And you get in mind that when he comes home from work, if he stops with his friends, he tells his friends about some of your behaviors, and therefore you get angry at that because you don't want his friends to be critical of you. So what do? He walks in the door, and you blame him for something else completely. Why didn't you get home at 6:30? Well, I told you I was going out with my friends. You didn't tell me. What's the real issue? The real issue is you felt sensitive. The real issue is you felt pain. The real issue is you felt scared. He walks in the door, you attack. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Lisa. Hi, Armand. How are you?
Hi, what's your name?
Lisa.
Lisa. Hello, Lisa.
Yeah, it's funny that this is the topic today because my fiancé and I were just having a conversation about our communication difficulties stuff yesterday. And we've been seeking counseling because of this. And it has a lot to do with blaming. I think that a lot of times we try to deal with some sort of issue and we don't get anything resolved because I'm blaming him and he's blaming me. And
give me an example of that, would you, Lisa?
Sure. A lot of times we'll be talking and he's telling me I'm not listening. I'm not listening to him. I don't listen to him or I'm not changing.
And give me an example of that, where he's saying you're not listening to him. What would he be talking to you, or what would you be talking to him about, or what would he be talking to you about when he says you're not listening?
If we're talking about money, for instance, like spending money, what we should be spending money on and not spending money on, sometimes he'll make comments about something, and I won't understand what he's saying, so I'll say, well, what did you mean by that? What did you mean? And he'll say, well, you're not listening to me. I repeated it.
Okay, so now when he says you're not listening to me, which is a blame, right?
Right.
What does he really mean?
I really don't know, because I usually feel...
All right, well, try it. Try it.
At that point.
Try it when you say to somebody, you're not listening to me. What are you really saying? What are you saying you feel as a child?
Unheard.
What?
I guess unheard.
Okay, now unheard is good, because unheard means that the person doesn't hear you. But if you're not heard, maybe your voice is too low. So one of the things that you really feel at that moment is a frustration that you can't communicate your feelings. You see,
right.
Your boyfriend can't communicate his feelings to you.
Hmm.
So he says to you, you're not listening to me. What he means is, you're not listening to the heart that I can't express to you.
Wow.
You're not hearing what's going on behind my broken words. I am trying to tell you something, but I don't know how to tell you. So he blames you. He says, you're not listening to me. And what he really means is, I can't tell you what's really going on in my heart. I don't know how to tell you. I don't know how to show you my heart, because the words are getting in the way.
Wow, I think you're on. That's great. Thank you.
You know, and that's part of the
helpful
problem. So part of the problem is trying to tell each other, trying to explain to each other that it's really not them, but
mm-hmm.
you don't have any other way of saying it, that you feel powerless, you know?
Yeah.
And powerless is what people feel. All right, so let's thank you for calling in. And what you got to look for is this powerless over and over again, you know, and where a person feels powerless.
Thank you.
Sure. Next call, 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
I tend to be the one to blame myself.
You blame yourself, yes.
Right.
You're the type who blames yourself. So no matter what goes on, you're going to say to yourself, it's my fault.
Right. What did I do?
Yeah.
Right. And always trying to fix the world, because I always think that I owe everybody something.
So you have a great deal of difficulty getting angry, right?
Yes.
Right.
I think.
It goes with it. So this is one of the great defenses of all time. I want you to imagine the struggle of somebody who is trying to shoot a bow and an arrow. They get an arrow and they pull back the bow and they don't have any place to point the bow. So they turn the bow around, imagine, because they don't know where to aim it, and they aim it at themselves instead. Mm-hmm. Can you get the picture of that? Imagine somebody shooting an arrow and they just can't find any place to shoot it, so they turn it around and they shoot themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's because somewhere inside you're angry, and what you're looking for is a way of expressing that anger, so you turn it on yourself.
Mm.
See? But you're really angry, and that's what that's about. So in your case, self-blame protects you against expressing the anger out there.
Mm. I sent a young couple to see you a couple of months ago.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you remember the name, Jesse and Linnell.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder what... Did I do something wrong for my daughter?
Well, what do you mean, did you do something wrong? You were trying to do some good.
Right.
And you sent this couple to see me. And what do you mean? How could it have been no good?
I sent them to see you because they're going through some challenges. And
yeah,
the challenges just that she's going through, I wonder, did I do anything to contribute to that? You know, in me raising her. But at the same time, I said, well, I did the best I could. But on the other hand, I said, well, you know, could I have done something? And it's just my nature to blame myself.
I guess every parent in the world would feel the way you do.
Mm.
You know, every person in the world would be asking the very same questions.
Mm.
And the same question about, you know, how did How did, is it my fault? Is it my fault as a parent? You are somebody who blames yourself a little more than most people.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds to me like you've got a really good heart, but you've got to take a look at your own anger. And it may be time for you to examine yourself so that you could feel a little freer with yourself. You've been pushing yourself down a little too long.
Yeah, well, it's happening since childhood. I spoke to you before about having nightmares since I was
since I was
five, and I still have the nightmares.
Well, you and I are going to have to meet and talk about this. What's your name?
Yvonne.
Yvonne, good
Yield.
To talk to you.
Yeah.
Yes, be in touch with me.
I will.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you,
we're
going to
take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to play something special for you, and we'll be right back. Leon Russell, who wrote Masquerade. You heard George Benson play that a lot. He sang that a lot.
We can just start over, but it's oh so hard to do when you're lost in the mystery. Thank you.
tried to talk it over, but the words got in the way. Leon Russell. So Leon Russell recently. Oh, yeah, he must be 85 years old. He could barely move. He crawled up onto a stage in some little village. Did a hell of a performance. Those of you who know Leon Russell, you know what I'm talking about. Just used to write for a lot of different singers. He was great. Wrote for Billy Joel. Wrote for a number of different people. Leon Russell. Hey, so, you know, Leon Russell has a clue to this idea here. We try to talk it over, but the words get in the way. Words. Maybe that's the difference between us and the animals. They didn't have words. I mean, a monkey gets mad at a monkey. He beats the monkey up. Right? That's it. The other monkey doesn't know why he's being beaten up. He just knows he's being beaten up, so he beats up back. So he fights back. Now, on the other hand, if a monkey stole something from a monkey and the other monkey jumped on him and beat him up, he'd understand why he was getting beaten up, and he probably wouldn't steal from the other monkey again. Okay, I won't take your coconuts, whatever it is that monkeys steal from each other. But with each other, you know, with humans, we have such complex things. We have time references. What you did back then was what you said 4 days ago. I remember 2 days ago when you were putting the Band-Aid on the window. I remember what you were saying. I remember as you were talking to what you had to say at that time. You know, I remember the argument, you know, the kind of things that you say to me. And that you go backwards and forwards. You promised that someday we would. I often wonder how people argue in foreign languages when they don't command the language. Because, you know, part of argument is the pluperfect. Being able to use the pluperfect properly in an English conjugation. You might have, would have, you might, could have, should. You know what I mean? Things that you could do. You do different conjugations, but you can't do those. In fact, the English language itself is replete with occasions to blame, because we say, you made me angry. And that's usually only what we do in English. We use that phrase. In most other languages, it's a reflexive word. See, I felt so on and so forth is the way you would express something rather than you made me feel it. So English, therefore American, therefore England, tends to blame a lot. You know, Italians never blame. Oh, sure they do. That's where we get the Sopranos. 212-209-2900. That's the blame committee, right? 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille speaking to you. Hi there. You're on the air. Hello. We have to take another call. I'm sorry. Probably somebody in a subway listening to our radio program, calling in and holding on for a long time. Try to take another call. Hi there, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hi. Hi, I was calling because I'm in a marriage where I'm the blamey of the relationship. And I was just curious if you could give me some tools maybe for when my wife and I get in an argument and I'm getting blamed. It generally comes with a long list of the things I've done.
Well, tell me, in effect, would you please tell me, if it were based on your wife, what's wrong with you? Not what's real, but based on the way she speaks to you, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with me?
Yeah, give me a list of
oh, what would she say?
Yeah, not what
what would I say?
No, what would she say? What would she say?
Okay.
What's wrong with you? You are...
She would say that she's unhappy in relationship to me.
Because you are... too...
She would say things to the effect of lazy.
You're too lazy. Okay, what else?
She might not say it directly like that, but...
In effect, like, you don't earn enough money for us.
Yeah, I don't... I don't take responsibility.
You don't... What does that mean? You don't take responsibility for earning more money to bring the two of you into a more easy lifestyle?
Somewhat like that. I'm a stay-at-home dad. She's working. She wants to be the stay-at-home parent, but she's the one who makes more money. And we're trying to... And we've been trying to figure out how to change that, but we're not sure how
to... So it's funny. She's the nagging husband who comes home to his stay-at-home wife.
Yeah.
You reverse that role.
Exactly.
So now she's... Because she's at work and you're staying at home with the children.
Exactly.
She now can berate you for the way the house looks and you're too lazy and you're not doing things right.
Yeah, it's very much like that stereotype, yeah.
Well, I don't just mean it as a stereotype.
No, yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, I just mean...
It must
yeah.
hurt something terrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Does it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really put a lot of time into all of this. And
do you ever feel the depth of the sorrow of how rottenly, how unappreciated you are and how trapped you feel?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I get pretty depressed about it.
Yeah, I hear. So you're not good at expressing your own anger either, right? This is something
I'm very afraid of expressing my anger.
Yeah, I hear.
But, I'm not one to... I very infrequently blame her for anything, but I'm trying to figure out how to just change the kind of repetitive blaming. And
yes, there comes a time when in that pattern, especially in the pattern with stay-at-home dads, I've seen this before, where her blame of you becomes an almost addictive process.
Yeah.
You know, like, in other words, she comes home and it's an addiction. She must do this. She's caught on it. And something has to break the cycle. It's as if she were an alcoholic and she were drinking. It's like she came home drunk every day. Instead of coming home drunk, she's coming home drunk with abuse every day. You know? And so now, if she were coming home, let's say she did a heroin every day, and she came home tripping out on heroin or stoned on heroin, what would you do? How would you handle that as the father of your kids that are at home?
I have a hard time comparing the two, but I guess if that, I don't know. I would try to figure out how to help her, I guess.
Right. You would try to figure out how to help her, but you couldn't tell her because she's a heroin addict, you see?
Okay.
And
yeah.
Right now, she's kind of a blameaholic. She's kind of doing this thing. And
right.
What she wants is one of two things out of you. She wants to get a rise out of you. She wants you to stand up and say, don't you dare do that to me anymore. And that's only going to happen when you finally feel the accumulation of it. But I hope it happens before you have to hit her over the head. And one of the things you've got to get to is you've got to get to the point where you feel the strength of saying, this will no longer work. Because what's going to happen is I'm going to bury my head in depression and our children are going to be brought up seeing this process.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to let that happen. So I can't take it anymore. Darling, I love you, but the way that you're doing this is destroying me and destroying us. Therefore, I want us to do something about it. I want us to go to some kind of counseling.
Yeah.
What about that idea? Have you brought that to her attention? Have you said to her?
Yeah, I've tried it in different ways. I mean, I think that those are the more productive conversations that we have.
Yeah.
But it's really a delicate conversation. It's she's very likely to think that I'm blaming her.
Well, you see, in effect, what you really have to say is that you feel bad and that her what she's doing is triggering this sense of bad that you're feeling. If she's a blamer, she'll be very sensitive to blame. Maybe the best thing you could do is let her listen to today's program.
What's that?
Let her hear today's program.
Yeah.
You know, the beauty of this is you could always replay it, but of course she's going to hear it and think that you're blaming her for blaming you, which in effect you are. But it's not the kind of blame where you just, you see, she's a child who's lost. She's one of these kids who are lost and not knowing what to do. Did you ever see a little kid? Did your children ever blame you for anything yet, or are they not old enough to do that?
Oh, they do it all the time, yeah. My son, who's five.
Five-year-old son will absolutely learn how to blame, and he will blame you, and that's one thing. But, of course, when he blames you, you don't take it that seriously, do you?
He's pretty good at it. Because he normally goes to my wife when she comes home and tells her what I've done.
Tells her what you've done, and then she blames you. Yeah, it's a pretty interesting cycle, and it's a cycle that's going to yield a lot of business for my clinic in the future.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the children who watch this and get caught in this, they over and over again see it as the way to be. You know, we saw our families do it, so we believe it's the truth. This is the way it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife was a pretty heavy with blame when she was a kid. Like, her father would, you know, when she would come to him, like, upset about something.
I hear. There's got to be a point at which you are going to stand up and say, yeah, no more. We can't do it this way anymore.
Right.
That point will happen. And when that point happens, feel free to reach out to me and we'll meet and we'll talk about it.
All right.
What's your name?
Abe.
Abe, I want to thank you for calling in. My heart goes out to you because I hear your tears.
Thanks a lot.
Right.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. So there's one person who hears it all the time. Imagine what that's like. Imagine what that's like to be blamed all the time, to be made to feel wrong all the time. People do that on jobs. You know, you can see there are some bosses who do that to their employees. They blame them, you know, and it's like, ugh. They get hated. Teachers do it to students, you know. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Hi there. I really can't hear you that well.
Hello.
There you are. Hi there.
Hi, it's so nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Your program comes so much apropos because I would like very, very much to solve I'm the blamer with my husband, and he's wonderful. He adores me, and I love him very much. But the trigger was the shooting happened in Virginia.
Yeah.
I'm not from this country. I live here many years, though, and overcome a lot of depression, and I'm well now. But I told him that this country really scares me, and I'm here because of him, and this is not what I really want to do or be, and he has nothing to do with it. And I don't know what else to say. I'm driving, and I.
So what are you really? Really saying to him? What you're really saying to him is please make me feel safe.
Yes, but in turn, he takes the blame. And he feels guilty not to let this anger that you mentioned in your program. He uses this because he has way to make me feel safe. I've told him I'm very open. I'm very articulate in describing my feelings and my needs. And I'm very much willing, and he knows, to fulfill his needs, especially physical needs, but he is a person that he likes to be a saint among the people that are really scared, among the people that really are drowning. And he causes himself a lot. He loses himself a lot in work, in his, you know, computers, and he's and making me be very compliant with me. In other words, very passive sometimes. That's how you opened your program, by saying exactly that, and it triggered the whole thought process.
So what do you want from him? If he would, what's your name?
Carmela.
Carmela, if your husband were to turn around to you and say the words that would have the deepest meaning to you, if one day he said to you, Carmela, what would be the words that he would say that would be magic for you?
Many. Let's spend time together alone, or I like to describe this feeling that I feel about anything. It doesn't have to
so
be about
he would
me.
Say to you, he would say to you, Carmela, please, darling, please get close to me. Please spend time with me alone. Please let me leave everything behind.
Yes,
I need to be close to you. I want to be close to your body. I want to be close to you. I want to hold you next to me. I want it to be just us for one day. I have feelings inside me
exactly. That
I'd like to talk to you about, but, you know. I mean,
exactly. Even intimately, and men are to blame for this. Generally, they don't even tell you what they like. I mean, him. I don't want to say everyone or what they need or.
Are you sure, Carmela, that you would be ready to hear it if he did it? Because it sounds to me like you grew up with a father just like him.
Oh no. No, I married him exactly for the opposite reasons. My dad was very negative, very pessimistic, very angry, and opened his anger, and very needy.
What I'm saying to you was the reason you married him is because he wasn't like your father.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And that if he starts turning to you and he shows his need, he's going to be just like your father. And that's what you're afraid of. Do you understand? You didn't want that. You chose a man who does not have those feelings, who is not needy. And what you'd like the most from him is you'd like him to show you his needs. So what I'm saying to you is, yes, you can have what you want, but you have to be prepared that even as you're getting what you want, you may stop him from giving it to you. Because even as I noticed before, as I was telling you, some of the words that I thought you wanted to hear, you kept interrupting me. Almost as if to say, no, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to exactly hear that. So you have to be prepared that not only do you want this change, but that you have an investment in him staying distant. And the investment you have him staying distant is because you had a toxic relationship with your father who did not know boundaries. He was a very needy man.
I have to think about that. That is a notion that I never considered.
Yeah, it always takes two people to dance.
Absolutely.
You know, and so there's two parts to it. So for everything that exists that's a negative thing between two people, there's usually both people keep it going for a reason. And by the time you get to the point where you could see that you want to make the change, by the time you get to that point, you have to both be ready for that change. So I want you to be ready to be open to be loved.
Absolutely. I just realized something else, too, as you're telling me this notion about my dad. Excuse me?
Tell me what it is.
That if I tell him, okay, I don't want to live in this nation anymore, I'm ready to move out, I wouldn't be strong enough to take care of his needs, those needs that you mentioned before, whether anger needs or neediness that he might conceal in his always irrational facade, and I'm not ready myself.
So
you know what I'm saying?
That's
like if
right,
I would
exactly
take,
right.
So why I would you take over and say, because he, in turn, I feel, he, you know, this nation, for I think every American is like a father or a mother, represents, like he loves Europe, but he will never, I don't think, live there away from his mom and his own roots. Like I did. He would never cut that out so radically. And this is connected to what you told me, but I will think further. But my intention is not to blame. I agree 100%. It stems from me.
So
I know I think
the point that you made today about discovering in you that there would be a part of you that might not be able to handle it, I think you should share that with him as well, and that may be the start of you both opening up. You know? Share that with him. I got to get going. Nice to talk to you. Thank you for calling.
How do I get an appointment with, I was thinking of Maria Atti. How do I do that?
Well, you can call my office at 212-757-4488. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We have to be going. I'm sorry I'm running a little late. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more of The Positive Mind. And we will be, if you want a copy of today's show, you can go to thepositivemind.com or send me an email at armand@brainlink.com.
That was The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. And as you heard, tomorrow at 1 p.m., Roberta Maria Atti joins Armand DeMille for The Positive Mind. Coming up next, the Arts Magazine. Talk back with Hugh Hamilton at 3 o'clock and Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen at 5 p.m.